Support for Life's Learning Curve comes from Six Toed Cinema. Currently, video is more prevalent everywhere than any other time. If you're considering video advertising, education-based learning video, corporate work, or anything in between, find Six Toed Cinema at sixtoedcinema.vistaprintdigital.com. Making film, making change. Six Toed Cinema. Band, where did it take you? Some people sign up for band in fifth grade and never quite achieve the higher enlightenment they thought might happen. Others, well, they fare better. For me, band was not my first step in music, but my second. Around second grade, my mother had me attend weekly piano lessons with a very understanding woman. She let me proceed at my own rate of interest, which I have to say wasn't a great deal of interest at that particular time. I remember, though, her house always smelled like fresh pine, and her piano sounded different than mine at home. It was like clunkier. I did learn notation. I learned treble and bass clefs, all the time signatures in unique note combinations. So when I did arrive to band in fifth grade, I was somewhat more prepared than many of the other kids were. And a few years later, I was out in the real world performing in a rock cover band called the Loch Ness Expedition. I stayed in band past my senior year of high school and learned. I learned about playing as a team, responsibility, practice, drive, watching the conductor, watching the guitar player for cues, and meeting your fears face to face. These are also many of the same skills I learned in sports as well. It's kind of ironic that these life skills are not primary subjects in schools these days, but rather, they're electives. I'm Paul Hart, and this is Life's Learning Curve. Stand by. We're originating in-house today at Studio 502, right here in the Midwest. We're excited to swap stories with a Chicago, DeKalb, Illinois-based performer-songwriter, 24-year-old Von Braun, also Matthew Von Braun, from the band Foresight. Now, in four segments, we'll explain how, one, Von's life, in hindsight, created his foresight. Segment two, we ask, what's going on with open mic night these days? In segment three, we find out if music is truly antisocial. And finally, we wrap up asking the question, is there really actually a room full of people out there that love you? Studio 502, we have Matthew Von Braun from the band Foresight. Matt and his band have just released a new song that's garnering a lot of attention. But first, tell me, how did this whole music thing start for you?
Well, actually, I started at 17.
Really?
late bloomer in the whole thing. I played trumpet from the age of like 10 to 13. So like fifth grade to like eighth grade. And I was in band. Yeah. I couldn't practice the thing. I had to go to class every day to practice. I lived in an apartment like my mom, my grandma, my sister, my brother, my aunt. And it's like, yeah, no one wants to hear me play this thing. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I just couldn't play the thing. I couldn't get better. You know, I used to be like first chair in seventh, eighth grade. And then, you know, they had a chair competition. I went to fourth.
Ulcers are made.
Yeah, exactly.
That's when I had my first ulcer right then.
So I was like, well, you know, I really like music, but I just don't have a place to play it, you know? And
so was guitar the next for you?
Guitar was next, but it took me until the year 17 to pick it up. I remember I started playing on my 17th birthday.
Wow.
To the date.
Did it come easy? Did it come natural?
No. Oh, no.
Lessons?
It sucked. No. No lessons. So My brother went to the military the day before my 17th birthday.
You got to use the trumpet.
And I actually
did you really?
Actually, I started playing the guitar actually a little before that. My brother would always be like, "You can't play guitar, you little piece of." And it's like, I don't want to play guitar around him. So like the moment he left, I took his room. I took like his things pretty much that he left behind, which was the guitar. And I'm like, "Well, now I have a room where I can play guitar." I started then. I started at like 17 in the summer. And that was like my senior year. And, you know, senior year, I just didn't know what I wanted to do, you know? Like, I feel like you can't ask like a high school kid at that time to pick what he wants to do for the rest of his life, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, well, I really like this music thing, but I also like want a job. You know, I came from St. Charles East, and I don't know if you know anything about
Actually,
St. Charles area. It's a good area. Don't get me wrong, folks.
It's a beautiful area. Yeah, it is.
But there's a lot of educational pressure on those kids because of just where they are in society, you know?
Right. Yeah.
That upper middle class, like, you gotta have a job, gotta have a house, gotta have those 2.5 kids.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And to me, that was like, no other way to put it. Just, man, I don't know what to do. So I started playing guitar that year 17, just constantly, like 8 hours a day playing that guitar because it was just like, this makes sense to me. Like, I really like doing this. I love playing like my favorite, like, you know, indie rock songs.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Big Modest Mouse fan, big Neutral Milk Hotel fan.
Okay.
Didn't listen to David Bowie until I was like 21, 22.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm a big David Bowie fan. That's down the line. That's a different time. But, you know, I started playing and I started loving it. And by the age of 19, I was, you know, saying goodbye to a bunch of friends at that time in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these friends are kind of, I feel like, keeping me back from, you know, trying to pursue this, you know.
Okay.
I had a very big guitar friend, you know, he was just into it, had all the $1,700 guitars and amp equipments and, like, you know.
A lot of foot switches.
Yeah. To brag about to your friends who are a little confused because they don't know anything about guitar, but I'm sitting over here just like, oh, how do I get one of those? Uh-huh. Like, that's great, you know. And
raised eyebrows on capos?
Yeah.
Capo, huh?
Like, oh, wow, we got a real flashy guy over here
putting
the capo on, you know. I was that guy,
Excuse
too.
Excuse me, everybody. Okay.
My bass player would always joke whenever I forgot my capo, which was often that he just, like, put his finger on it for me.
Good bass player.
Yeah, right.
So, is it Matthew? Is it Matt? Is it Vaughn? What are you going by professionally these days?
Professionally Vaughn. Mm-hmm. However, off the stage, you can call me whatever you want. So I go by Matthew Von Braun, you know, like as you see on my Facebook page or like my Instagram page, Matthew Von Braun, just all one word, guys.
Hey, tell me about Foresight. This is a band.
Oh, yes.
And is Foresight sometimes just you or is it you and people in and out the door? Tell me about that.
It's kind of a revolving door right now,
okay.
But like I plan to keep it that way.
Okay.
I used to have a band, and God bless them. I love them to death.
Yes.
But
right.
They just had, you know, these things they had to do. I think they call them lives, I think. They have lives. Yeah.
Lives.
Yeah, they have these things called lives and priorities.
We'll throw up the definition here.
Yeah, yeah, well, you know, like one of them has kids and, you know,
responsibilities.
Yeah, one has a 9-to-5 job in Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so naturally.
And you?
Naturally.
Capo.
Yeah, me, it's like, guys, I've got a capo. Yeah. So, you know, I'm the one writing the songs and, like, trying to do this stuff. I'm, you know, getting my feet wet, you know.
Cool.
It didn't work out. You know, first band, it doesn't really work out,
I feel. With a lot of people, though.
Yeah.
That's a repeated story for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
You keep looking and looking and looking until you find something that's very comfortable that you can fit into.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Finding those people, it's very hard to do. And even when you do find those people, you know, it's hard to get together.
Yeah, it's...
And so that's why
creative personalities, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Creative differences, one, and just scheduling conflicts, you know.
Yeah.
So Foresight right now is a solo project
okay.
by me. However, I have people like Riley Hart of the Walrus Filter. Check out his music soon, I think.
yeah.
He's got something going on. He's always working.
He may have recorded with these mics. We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know.
He may have.
He might be working on that.
Yeah.
He might be working on that right now as we speak. Yeah. But God bless him. He does a great job. I'm trying to get my other friend, Hunter Funk. He does mastering stuff for me.
Yeah.
He mastered The Room Is Filled with People That
I
Love
like
You.
I like that. I thought he did a great job with that.
Yeah.
We're going to talk more about the song in just a little bit.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for purchasing it, by the way.
No problem. If I didn't like it, I wouldn't have purchased it, quite honestly, because the title was long.
Oh.
So I thought, well, I can't put it in a cue card or something.
Yeah, Spotify actually was like, hey, this title's too long when you put featuring Riley Hart of the Walrus Filter.
The Room Is Filled With .. You. You know, you know, one of those consolidation things.
There's a new park in the middle of town.
You think back about somebody who really encouraged you along the way?
Musically, there's not a lot of people, like, personally I can say that have, like, encouraged me. I'd say one of the first people that has is, honestly, Riley Hart. Like, when I first met him, a local guy, he was working on stuff, and he was like, I'm always working, man. I'm like, yeah, I want that mentality, you know? I want that work ethic. And, you know, just seeing, like, all these other professionals, like, oh, you just got to keep doing it.
It's a discipline, I mean, and that's kind of what anything in art is. You have a self-imposed discipline, and you take that discipline, and you do something with it. But it's going to – what you do, and if I was a writer of music, which I'm not, I mean, what I did would be totally different, and it would be fine.
Yeah.
But there are people out there that will teach you a course on how to do it step by step.
Yes.
It's going to be that way, then. You've got a formula. You don't want the formula.
And it's going to be different, you know? Like, people say you have to learn the rules to break them, and I'm all for that. But, like, if you're being taught a step-by-step process that doesn't go well for you, it's pretty okay to abandon that process, I feel.
It's,
you know,
it's okay. Yeah,
yeah, like, yeah, it's up to the artist to finish their art, you know, like,
in your
words.
Yeah,
who
that's
cares
what makes it original.
Yeah,
exactly.
So that's why I say, like, the difference between, like, songwriting and mixing is a little different. You know, a lot of huge differences, you know. There's a lot of technical stuff in mixing, you know. I came from you know, mixing and mastering program, which is great, under the teacher of Mark Beth, one of my bigger influences in life. Mark Beth, just a mixer, helped me master one of my tunes, Life Is Bizarre. I cheated winning 2 recording hours with him, actually, to get said master. We had this game he made up, and I cheated my way through it. I was like, well, I'm getting 2 hours of recording session.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's something I should cheat for in class, you know?
Yeah.
And I will proudly cheat again. If it's 4 hours, I'll cheat even harder. Oh,
Jamal,
yes.
Tell me about your first time in a studio.
It's a funny story, actually. I was recording a demo, demo album with my band, and my drummer's like, well, I'll pick you up. I'll bring the drum stuff. Just make sure you're ready at this time. And I'm like, okay, great. Like, sounds good. So that day I woke up extra early. I went to the gym and I ran a mile to get my lungs ready. I was feeling great.
Were you singing it while you're running?
Oh, yeah, I was singing. Yeah, I got some weird looks.
Some opera, you know.
First day of recording professionally ever. We go to this place in Joliet.
All right.
Rewind. I get picked up by my drummer. You know, I'm feeling great.
Yeah.
I get in the car. My drummer goes, I'm hungover, dude.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, okay. like I'm a young dude right now.
Uh-huh,
like,
uh-huh.
Very young. I'm like 19, like maybe 20. I'm a very fragile guy right now, like, with my music. Like, I'm starting off. You know how, like, you kind of put a lot of self-worth into, like, music or, like, whatever art you're in, because it's a very you're like a glass. You're, like, made out of glass
at that time.
You're, like,
fragile.
And it's like, you're hungover? Like,
what?
That makes me feel like
this is a big thing.
Yeah, like, this is a big deal, guys. We're going to record all these tunes that we worked so hard on, and what, you're telling me you're hungover? And, like, you know, I didn't say
what?
That to him, because I'm just like, that's cool.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just happy we're actually doing this.
So you could, if there was a camera there, you could probably actually see the sadness happen.
Yeah.
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 Right here's where my heart broke, right here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, frame by frame.
I just remember the, oh, my.
Yeah.
When we get in there, the than my bass player. You know, he needs a little time to warm up. That's fine. That's fine. You know, we eventually do it. Mm-hmm. You know, it was great. Mixed and mastered, like, the demos right then and there. We got them. We did not like them, so we had to, you know, send them back. You know,
what didn't you like about them? I mean, because you knew right then. See, that's a really good sign of an artistic person or a personality. You knew something was not quite right.
Yeah.
Was it the sound, or was it the recording, or was it just the mix was wrong?
So I hated the performances.
Oh, okay.
I hate to be like about it. Not necessarily my performances. But,
I gotcha.
But
maybe
yeah.
The drummers.
The drummer was okay. The bass player was like, ugh. And I was like, oh, what are you talking about? Oh, that's what you're talking about. You know, I kind of glossed over some things, and he was talking about them. Like, oh boy. Well, you know what? They're demos. Like, this is our camaraderie run. You know, like we do this to like get some stuff out. You know,
right.
I had a lot of fun. I don't know if they did, you know, and that kind of dawns on you, you know.
Well, it sounds to me like somebody was putting 100% in them, and somebody else might have been putting me at less than that.
Yeah,
and I don't care if it's 1% less; it's going to make it.
Yeah, you're right.
It makes a difference.
You're absolutely right. That's kind of the main reason I do everything by myself now, mixing and mastering wise. And
isn't that the truth, though?
Yeah, no, yeah, it's really true. I'm blessed to have a guy like Riley, you know, record like stuff with me like this. Like we got this song started and finished before like a handful of songs I'm still working on, you know, like we just like kind of powered through and like blinked and, you know, it was there. And I love that, you know, we catch each other a lot like that, you know, like he'll tell me when sometimes it's enough and I'll tell him when sometimes it's enough too, mm-hmm. because, you know, we do want the best recording. And I love that about the guy. I love that. He wants the best live sound too, as you know, he does live mixing and stuff for weddings and stuff, and it transitions really well to like the local show we had.
Now it's on the range, clinically insane, in and out of space, in and out of face, like so precious.
So I gotta say, lately I've you know, been kind of contemplating the importance of open mics in the area. Now I'm sure they're there, but I can't find them. I can't name them. They're disappearing. They're disappearing, man, you know. But lately, you know, it's been kind of same three or four people. And, you know, I used to go there and I used to, you know, find people to get my music out to.
Yeah.
But now it's like I'm playing for the same three, four people. And and you'll find that these open mic communities aren't exactly as social as you'd like them to be, you know.
Now, how do you mean that?
Like, they're not as friendly as you'd think these days.
For like, open mic?
Yeah, I
you
know.
Like you get a heckler, or what are you talking about?
Yeah, well, you know, that is a little different because of its wonderful host. He has his own Twitch stream. He makes a lot of money doing it.
Yeah,
like, he's very successful. He's honestly the funniest man I know.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, he's very sarcastic. He's very funny. Uh-huh. Very funny. But, like, he can come off as, like, a little bit dickish sometimes, you know? And he's the host of the open mics and the comedy open mics there.
Yeah.
And the comedy open mics are off. Feeding frenzy for the internet folk because he hooks it up to the Twitch stream.
I gotcha.
So these comedy people go out there and they have no idea, like, you know, how to deliver comedy, and they go up there and these people pay money online.
Wow.
And it's like, what? What is going on here? Like, you're kind of dissuading people from not coming.
Right, exactly.
And it's like, I can't tell you how many.
It's got to be a safe place to do this.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I say they're not friendly, but, you know, they're very friendly in the sense of like, oh, hi, how are you? Blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like music, you know, no one's really thinking about each other's music at an open mic. You know, they're like, they're more worried about what they're going to do up there. And, lately, I've been getting a lot more people online, you know, for like followers and stuff. And it's kind of scary because it's like I can get more followers one day online than I could months at any open mic.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's my biggest concern about open mics. I'm concerned that they're dying.
Uh-huh.
I'm concerned that maybe the encouragement isn't there to actually go out and perform at an open mic.
Sure.
You'll see like a lot of these open mics too, you know, they're getting more track oriented. You know, they'll bring tracks and sing to them. I'm very happy about that.
That's okay. That's I'm okay. very so happy. You bring in your laptop and you just sync up and go.
Yeah, that's generally what a Foresight show is, but a little more complex because I do the mixing and stuff. Right. And we got a sound guy now to help us with like the sound.
Very cool.
Yeah, which is something I really enjoy about my band now. I can take my band's right here on my phone. Like
that's
all
excellent.
All 4 to 8 players of
them. If I was 10 years older, I would be like, what?
Yeah.
Well, how'd they get in there?
That's you downloaded them.
But you're right. There's got to be a safe place for comedians or for musicians. My experience with open mic nights, I was in bands and things. Is I never was a featured performer, but there would be somebody up there, generally like somebody's mom. We have so and so. We're so lucky to have so and so and so and so tonight, and we want to hear them. Let's give a big round of applause for and they. There'd be some guy, and these guys are going to rock out for you. Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
But it was all very positive, you know, even if the band wasn't put together yet.
School and music at the same time, I got to say. When I was 21, I was in a pretty low place. Just emotionally, romantically wise. A lot of string of bad lovers. Long story short.
Album two titles.
Yeah. You know, I was just in a low place. You know, people I thought that weren't going to do things to me that way. You know, did them. You know, classic heartbreak stuff. I was in a low spot. And it was the first time I ever decided that I was actually going to go to school for music. So I've never had a lesson in my life on any instrument except for maybe piano. But even then, I didn't need them. I'm like, you got to take the class, you know. So, one day I'm late to music theory. I think it's a year after. I'm apathetic right now, you know. I just don't care about anything. And guy screams at me, you know, just like I did this thing for you. Like, you know, he came down to the studio, recorded some saxophone tracks and stuff. And he's like, I was there on time and you weren't here. And, you know, I felt like I broke his heart. You know, he was upset. You know, and that was like, okay, Matt, well, your apathy is starting to really upset your, like, teacher that wants to see you succeed. You know, and this guy had passion out the wazoo.
Yeah, yeah.
Sean Maxwell was his name. He was a great guy.
Okay.
Like, one of the best teachers I've ever had. I absolutely needed that. I needed a kick. You know,
As we all do at times.
My other teacher is a sweetheart and a wonderful man. You know, he let me get away with a lot more stuff. You know, he was the dad in the relationship.
Yeah,
you know? But I needed both of them in my life at that time. They were monumental to me. You know, I'm still here. You know, but they were monumental to that kind of
thing. They mattered.
They mattered a lot. They mattered a lot more than most people at that time. They still do, you know. Hardest job I ever did was I was in a band that I did not want to be in. I don't want to drop some names, but I was in this kid's, you know, up and coming band. I think it was called like Go Digital or something like that. I go there and we learn some covers, you know, like, you know, that's kind of fun. We learn one of his songs. It's another, you know, 3-4 chord song. It's like, okay, just play the chords. This is great. Fantastic, you know? And then, you know, practice one goes well. Practice two, like, oh boy, I don't know about this. Like, these are the songs they're playing. They're pretty easy. I don't get much of a challenge here. And, you know, I was practicing in the front man's apartment, you know, his dad was there, and very invested dad. He goes, okay, look, you know, you've practiced with him 2 times now. Like, we need a serious answer right now. Can you be committed to this band full time? And I was just like,
dad's the managing, apparently.
Yeah, he's the manager. And he's like, this guy has been established in the Chicago and Rockford area.
Okay.
And I'm like, I know he's not. you're really like pushing yourself up here. Like, it's just like a very like very weird like space to be in, because you know you're like you know you're just trying to have fun in a band after like practice one or two. You're trying to feel it out, and you're like, okay, I'm vibing with the guys, and then you know he sticks the whole like, I need you to be in this band. Like,
what are you willing to do?
He is a big deal. It's like, I don't think he's a big deal. Yeah. And it's like, you know, I...
How old were you at that time?
I was 19. No, I was 21. I was 21. Okay. I was 21.
Right. Still.
I don't appreciate, for anyone listening out there, if you're managing your son's band, please do not pressure a guitar player or something or someone, you know, in the band to join the band right away and, you know, make a big serious deal about the band, because it's one way you're not going to get anyone, okay? Mm-hmm. Let me tell you.
Right.
It's a very uncomfortable position to be in.
Yeah. Agreed.
This one show I did recently was my first ever acoustic show. And the first two the first two acoustic acts, God bless them, they were fantastic, but I felt like I was the only one listening to them, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Everyone was talking over them. There was no microphone.
Yeah.
A little weird for an acoustic set, but very small room, very small acoustics.
Yeah.
I'm going to say you cut off to this wall here, that's the size of this room. It's okay. Very small, so you can sing. You're just going to have to do some yelling for people to to get there. And, you know, they were kind of wallflowers in that environment. You know, they didn't have that... They didn't have that oomph that they needed. They were sitting down and stuff, so I get up there, and I just start kicking.
And moving.
Like, I'm just, like, full on, like, kicks higher than my head.
The video I saw where people are going around you?
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
I'm glad that got published. I'm glad somebody shot something.
Yeah.
You got all these people involved, and they were digging what you were doing.
Yeah, but you have to make the crowd uncomfortable, like... You have to make them as uncomfortable as you would initially feel being a performer. Because when you're up there, you're a little scared, you know?
Yeah, right.
Like, I've been up there so many times
now.
What's
it just you?
Yeah, where it's like, I don't...
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, the fact that I don't have bandmates anymore is even scarier.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, if you start screaming at the crowd and you start calling them out individually, they get a little tense. You know, they're like, whoa, okay. Yeah,
what is this, Vegas?
This front man is just, like, talking to us now, and he's doing these ridiculous things, and it's like, I can't keep my eyes off of them. Like,
yes.
You know, you have these people finally looking at you. When you have the room looking at you, you're like, all right, I'm doing something right.
Yes.
I didn't even play the song yet. Like, there's so much... pre-song, after-song stuff that you got to go through with and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, like, do you know how many artists are out there right now, like, playing an acoustic guitar talking about their breakups?
All of them?
All of them.
So is there anything else that you do creatively besides music? I mean, obviously you have to write lyrics, so you might journal or you might do poetry or paint or anything?
In my opinion, I think most of that is a general waste of time because of just how much I enjoy making music. I know that sounds a little like, blech, but I will admit I will draw from time to time.
Yeah.
As a solo artist, you have to take breaks. Like, it's just kind of a given. Like, you're doing a lot of work, and it's like sometimes you need to take a step back because you're kind of looking at everything, and, like, that's a lot, you know?
Exactly.
It's nice to have a person there to help you with that, but at the same time, you're just going to, like, disagree with the person unless you really, really think the world of them.
Your most recent release, I really like. It's called The Room Is Filled With People Who Love You. Long title.
People That Love You, I'm sorry.
That Love You?
Yeah. You'll figure. I know I know it's either or.
That.
Yeah.
All right.
Because
I'm sorry.
No. All right. No, you're not the first person to make that mistake. I would actually make it People Who Love You, but I recorded it. And I was kind of
it's in the can.
I'm kind of stuck with it now because it's like Who Love You makes sense.
You could go back with a really bad microphone and just change that one word and drop it in.
I'll drop it in the master.
Yeah, that's right. I like it better because I would have been like, shouldn't it be whom?
Love You. Oh,
whom
my
love
gosh.
You? What was the inception of that song? It's obviously you're, to me, you're going in a very literal, positive direction and telling people about life, right?
Yeah, like it's very literal. Like I really like the literal like context of songs because I've just heard everything before, I feel, you know? I've heard like you know how many people have made a song about like breaking up and like being heartbroken or like overcoming the obstacles, and it's like, well, yeah, we can write songs about that, but like we should probably, you know, kind of focus on more like altruistic meaning behind like tunes these days, because we're in a time where like altruism is at an all-time low and cynicism is at an all-time high and conflict's at an all-time high. So I think music has to respond to that by not telling people how much money they have. Like I want to talk about like, you know, like the problems we all have on the inside, you know, up here lately, you know, and like we kind of have to remember that, you know, life's a precious thing, you know, and
absolutely,
you know, a lot of those lyrics are very literal. You know, the first couple lines, I just picture me and Riley hanging out.
Yeah,
so you know, and you know, like that's a big part of life. You know, that I'm starting to realize, like you can put in a lot of work and you still won't be happy. But like if you have just like that day with a guy, that day with like a room filled with people that love you, you know, it can make all the difference in your life. And you know, I have a lot of friends who have you know, suicidal tendencies and suicidal thoughts, and not gonna lie, you know, like I have flipped through the book, so to say, you know, and it's kind of scary to, as I go on in life, to see how many people have contemplated it, have you know, debated it, and a shocking fact I found is that mostly everyone does, you know.
I agree,
and it's like, sure, they're not going to do it. They're not going. But they feel it.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah. Everything you just said is the exact reason why I'm doing this podcast.
My back. Every time I sing, left foot over the right. I can't turn my back. Every time I sing, left foot over the right. I can't turn my back. Every time I sing, life's a precious thing. Don't you go.
That goes for everybody out there, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, fill your rooms up with people that love you, folks. Like, that's what it boils down to, you know? Like, go out there and try to connect with people. Like, I know that sounds hard, and if you don't connect with someone, that's okay too, guys.
Yeah.
You know, being alone is okay too.
You never know when you've made somebody's day. You just never know. And it might be the smallest thing you do. And my son's a lot like that. I learn a lot from him. He's a person that always seems to be very optimistic about things when other people sometimes aren't. And there's been times I'm supposed to be teaching him as his father or just being a better role model, and he'll just stop and say to me, did you ever think that maybe they're just having a bad day? Or did you ever think that they just don't have the money for that or something like that? And you just stop and go, yeah, he's right.
No, I love Riley for that. I gotta admit, he has that tendency to just kind of notice that contrary, staring everyone in the face, but no one kind of sees. And you're like, oh yeah, right. Like, of course. Like, why did I even sweat that? You know, I like to think I'm adopting that kind of mentality. You know, like
it's two of us.
I'm very, yeah. I'm a very optimistic guy these days. Like, just for everything.
Right now in your life, what do you think your purpose is? If you had to take a stab at that,
my purpose is to make music.
Okay,
that's it. That's literally it. Try to get it out there. You know, I know like people want to make a living off of music and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I do too. You know, like I just want a little of that. you know, to pay the bills and stuff. I don't care about the money. But I want to be an artist, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's the only goal I have. Like, it's a big goal. It's a really big goal, in case you haven't noticed. Like, to be a professional artist, there has to be a lot done, you know, a lot of work involved in it.
Getting back to the song, when you first heard the final mix, were you there when it was being mixed?
Yes, I mixed it myself.
Oh, you did? Okay, yeah. So when you finally got done, because I know what it's like when you do that final edit, and you fix this, you shorten this, you lengthen this, you bring the audio up here, da, 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 you do a lot of things. But then there's that moment where it's done, and you actually know, I just one more, it's done.
Yeah.
What was that moment like for you?
That moment, it was fantastic. I was really happy with the mix. It was the quickest mix I've ever done.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I showed it to the collaborator, Riley.
Yeah.
And he was like, yep, that sounds done. And so I'm like, yeah, all right, I got a 2 out of 2. Like, I'm glad. Like, I've never really collaborated before, so yeah. I guess I put a lot of investment in the other person this time. It was nice doing that. Yeah. To be honest, it's like, you know, you finally have someone over your shoulder being like, because if it's you, you're just like, oh, okay. Is this done, Matt? Like, I don't know. Vaughn, is it? I don't know, Matt. Is it? I don't know, Vaughn. You have that, like, constant back and forth. You don't release it for 3 months because you're still tweaking the EQs and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So I took it into a mastering guy. He does $10 masters. I know you know the industry standard, or the local industry standard, is like $50.
Okay.
It's like $50 for a master. So you can get 5 masters for the price of one.
Wow.
The problem with my, and so I took it into him. I shadowed him. Mm-hmm. I learned so much. This guy's a wizard in mixing and mastering.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He crapped all over my mix. He just like, oh, mud, terrible. Terrible hits right here. Too much this on the snare. Needs more high end on the vocals. And I'm like, oh my. So he masters it, and it sounds beautiful.
It does.
It sounds like a professional made it.
It does. It sounds wonderful.
I'm like, wow, you chewed me out. You told me what was wrong with it.
Yeah.
And you mastered it.
Could you hear the difference, though?
Oh, absolutely.
You could.
The clarity, night and day. I was like shocked. So I get home, and I realized we were mixing on his speakers, and he turned up the bass way too much.
I see.
So nothing but and the bass kick. So it's like, I can't do anything with this song. Like, I can't release it. Hey, bud, do you mind remixing it super quick? Or remastering?
Right.
And I never got it. Never got the second mix, like master of it. So I did what
it, you ran it through?
Yeah, I was like, well, he said I had a terrible mix. Like, I'm going to fix it. So I made it even better.
Oh, it was a learning experience anyway.
I made it even better. And I sent it back to him. And I was like, hey, master this one. Tell me what you think of it. Never got it back. So I went to my buddy, Hunter Funk, who actually will deliver on a $10 master. Because, you know, he's not recording several artists, by the way. He's a hardworking man.
So do you think the music scene is gaining new people?
Like, the only 3 or 4 real bands, though, that I'm familiar with, like, indie rock-wise. And I'm like, that's not a lot of music. And I'm wondering why that is, you know? And at first, I read this thing, you know, that, you know, music locally is antisocial. You know, like, on a local level. Like, artists actually have a hard time talking to each other and networking and actually talking about that.
Agreed,
and I can't tell you how many times I've met an artist who's just like, oh, boy, I don't want to talk to people.
They're communicating through their work.
Yeah, they think they can communicate through their work is the problem. See, so I thought, well, maybe maybe these bands aren't getting out and talking to the people enough. But, you know, like, what if those bands are just like inclusive? You know, what if they're just not helping the growing of the community? What if they're only looking out for themselves? And I thought, well, I've personally met these bands, you know, they don't seem to be that way. Like, maybe one or two band members have rubbed me the wrong way. I'm sure they didn't want to, but mm-hmm. I remember I was playing at Side Street one time and one of their members was just talking over me during a solo set.
What?
Yeah, I could, I was like mid song. I'm like, I can hear you. like I can literally hear your whole conversation, buddy. And I'm like, well, I find that a little disrespectful.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that's just me. You know, that was just me. It was a couple years ago. And then I realized how many artists out there locally are actually, like, producing music, like, releasing it. And I'm like, wow, no one's releasing music. No artist
right.
out there right now seems to be, like, presenting themselves
yeah.
or presenting more music, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of these artists' main problem then is just not releasing music. Mm-hmm. They're not sitting down. They're not recording. They're not mixing. They're not mastering their stuff. Like,
right.
they're just sitting on stuff, being like hung up on some fact or something about why they can't do stuff. Something because like I'll talk to this one band, like, yeah. oh well, you know, we don't have a band, and it's like, oh well, that's a problem. how about you? Oh well. I don't have a space and I need a drummer. And it's like,
yeah,
you need a drummer? That's kind yeah. of a big deal. Yeah. Like, a lot of people out there, unless they're like making their own stuff, like top to bottom, like they're kind of up a creek.
And I used to think life was so bizarre.
Can you be objective about what you do? Can you look at it and say good or bad or
yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I can. I'm very glad I'm my own worst critic.
Yeah.
Right. I know like, you know, people say that and they'll be not about it, but you kind of really have to have some self-awareness when you're an artist.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, cause then you get pretentious, you know, unless you're not like, you're like, oh, I do this and this. And it's like, okay, buddy, you just made a song. Like I make songs. It's not a big deal. Like, I'm sure it's a big deal for people who haven't made as many songs as I have.
Or somebody
like
who has made a song. There's people out there that write, and they'll write books, and they've got one book in them, and then that's it. They've told their story, and that's okay. That's all right. Then there's people who write their entire lifetime because they've got that discipline. For you, I can tell you just by our conversation that you have – you're out someplace and you want to go home and play. You want to go home and
yes.
write. You just start going.
Well, you read my mind.
Yeah.
I think that passion has to fuel that energy because I've met people with passion, but no energy. They have the spark or they don't
yeah.
have the gas in them, you know?
Yeah.
And that's because their lives kind of have been dictated for them
uh-huh.
to not put that energy into what they love doing.
Right.
A la like a 9-to-5, you know? Like,
yes.
Yeah. Like, it's hard. It's hard to get into something when mm-hmm. 40 of your hours a week are dedicated to something you hate doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, like,
yeah. Yeah.
unfortunately, those 40 hours is the money you need to keep doing this
mm-hmm.
stuff. And it's like, okay, which one do I do, you know?
Yeah.
And
or how do I find that balance?
Yeah, yeah. I'm at that crossroads right now. Now that mm-hmm. I am a full blown adult,
mm-hmm.
No, I'm not gonna lie. I love being an adult. It's pretty nice.
Yeah.
As a kid, I kind of had those adult problems.
It's
so
your own rules.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really? In school, did you?
I grew up with my mom having money problems.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And
okay,
therefore,
yeah.
I had money problems.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Long story short,
yeah.
you know, I got introduced to adult things pretty early.
Yeah. In general, we all hang around with people who think similarly to ourselves, like doctors hang around with doctors. Are they hanging around with other like-minded people for writing music? Is that important to your process?
It is, but it isn't. I get a little sick of hearing people's creative processes. Because, quite frankly, they don't have music to back it up. I guess I'm a little jaded in that sense with that. I have a very extreme way of thinking on that because it's like, okay, you talk the talk,
yeah,
but you don't have material. Like, you don't have anything
yeah.
to present to me, you know? And it's like, it kind of goes off that, like, when someone, you know, describes a song, You know, like in like an article, you read it and it's like they do this and this with the luscious melodies, and you hear the song and it's it's a song.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, okay, that was not what I was expecting.
So perhaps the guy that wrote the review on it actually was more gifted than the song itself.
And even though the band is like, well, write this. We're going to write this for you, because like that's what the journalist does in most cases. I feel like, how would you describe your music? And it's like, well, I describe it like this. And it's like, wow, that sounds like rock and roll to me. And that part scares me. That's the part where I'm like, no, you have to realize that you are not doing something different at the same time, because like music is supposed to progress.
I started in music probably I was forced to take piano lessons when I was for second grade.
Wow.
My mom said, you'll thank me for this someday. And she was right, but it took a lot of years for me to thank her about it. Because when I migrated to drums in fifth grade band, you think you're going to be playing a drum kit, but that's not it. You're playing a snare drum.
Percussion.
On the process of writing, do you write alone, you have talked about this. Do you prefer to write alone, or do you prefer to write with someone?
I prefer to write alone. Lately, this last song, me and Riley, we've been just kind of doing it out together, which is, like I said, this song has been an anomaly for me, like the whole process, because I've actually worked with someone on this instead of having the parts and then telling them. But I generally I like to be alone when I do it, you know, like I don't like anyone there, like no one around my shoulder. I like to be isolated.
Yep.
I like to express myself like, you know, in a poor way around like myself so that when like people actually hear it, it sounds better, because I don't like being the guy that's like, I just wrote a new song, I'm going to stream it on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Like I'm going to have something before I show it. Like I'm going to have like something more developed than that. And because you're very fragile in that state, I feel.
Sure.
I don't know about you.
Well, I don't like distractions when I'm writing. And for me, it's more of the written word and that type of thing. I have to, it's got to be, it doesn't have to be silent. But sometimes I use music to create a mood, a direction I want to go mood wise. But that's for writing the written word. Painters, people that draw whatever, sometimes use their attics because they think it has a perfect light.
Really?
So that certain time of day, the sun comes through and it just lights it sideways.
Cool.
So they have that specific environment that they need. To do their best work, and they are artists because you know they're doing that. Is there any environment that you use when you write that you try and get to? If you're not sure about that, like I always write better when I'm in Key West, and a lot of it has to do with I give myself permission to think, to relax, and to think differently. I know that's what it is. So that environment helps me. And so a lot of times mentally, it's where I go in my head.
Okay. No. That's a good question. It's a good, like, you know, for me, it's not Key West. It's kind of the opposite. You know, it has to be cold.
Antarctica.
It has to be cold. It has to be dark.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
I grew up in this cold, you know, this Illinois wishy-washy temperature land that we live in, you know, and like that's with a dude after a while. Like I don't know if you guys know this, Illinoisans, but like we are, you know, subject to the most bizarre weather, and I don't know if it's messing you guys up, but it sure does mess me up. But no, that's not really necessarily why I like it cold. I just get really into the music. When it's colder, I can go longer
because
I don't sweat as much, you know. It's about stamina. It's about putting everything into it and being able to like calm down after that, because there are times when I'll get too into it, you know. I know that sounds a little weird to say.
No, not at all.
But the night as well. I don't know what it is about the night, but Like, day writing's never been my kind of cup of tea. Like, I like being in an environment where I know it's more isolated. Mm-hmm. I feel like the nighttime.
Boy, there's something about 2 and 3 a.m. sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
There's just something about, and you know it, and you get that feeling, and all of a sudden, it's like a switch goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, absolutely.
So I can understand that. I used to be that way. I'm not that way anymore, but I used to be that way up until a few years ago. But, And then it gets to be like 4, and you're like, oh, I've got to go to sleep. Yeah. I got to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
Why did I do – no, I love this. I want to do this, and I don't want to go to work.
Like, yeah, let's call off.
Yeah, you can't.
I try not to have that time anymore, like you said, because, like, you know, you're trying to work more, you know? Mm-hmm. You're trying to get more done.
So adulting?
Yeah, you're trying to be an adult. You're trying to grow up a little.
Yeah, you are.
You can't be like, well, I can only do this between 9 and – yeah. Midnight, you know? Yeah. It's like, I need to work more on this. 3 hours is not enough time to work on this stuff.
Well, that was one of the great things when I was teaching. You know, they say, you know, you get summers off. Well, you do work in the summer to a minimal degree, but then there's time where you actually, and it used to take about a week for me into summer break to find myself. And all of a sudden you find you're like, what was I doing? What was I doing 9 months ago? And you kind of go back to it, and then you find that creative side of yourself or what you are working with.
Yeah.
And whereas with, I think, a regular job that has vacations and things, which are nice, you lose that sometimes because you don't have 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks. And you find that part of yourself that used to be there.
Fading away.
It's there, but it's fading away, and eventually it will go away if it's not, you know, maintained.
No, I felt that way during college this last year. I cranked out 40 credit hours in a year.
And did you?
Yeah, I wanted to die, man. Like, oh, my God.
40 credit hours, that's why, you know?
I graduated, but I still wanted to die. Like, I was just not doing what I wanted to do with my life, you know? Like, I absolutely feel that, you know? Like, sometimes you got to kind of just face your calling, you know?
Wow. That was intense. And it wouldn't have made a difference if there was a room full of people that loved you at that time.
Oh, no. I was sick just, about everyone. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So, like that.
So when you write music, or you write a song, does it come from, like, your gut? Does it come from the emotional side of you? Does it come from, like, dreams all of the above?
You know, like, as an artist, you kind of have no choice but to take inspiration from everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, I've had dreams where I've had songs in them and they come out that way.
Yeah.
I have songs come into my head. I'll be playing and jamming and something happens. I think that's a duty as a songwriter or just a creative to literally grab them wherever you can, because it's like, if you are truly a creative, you'll be able to take them from anywhere. You'll be able to roll with pretty much anything, you know? And, like, this song with Riley was really cool because, you know, he wrote the guitar part and I came up with, you know, just more stuff for it. And like, that was really cool because it's like I did not start with this idea. Like, this is a new idea. I picked up on it, you know. Me and Riley have worked on other stuff in that time where it's like, we didn't even touch this stuff. Like, we're gonna try to develop it that way. It hasn't necessarily gone our way too much. Riley's been bringing the life out of it for what we've been doing.
Yeah.
It's like you combined, like, Thai food with, with like, I don't know, country fried steak.
There you go. And that's going to be your first album cover. is Thai food and country fried steak.
Thai food and country steak. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
So is writing therapeutic for you?
Absolutely.
I mean, very much so. I mean, based on what you've told me about your background and where you come from and where you're going, it seems to me like it's very cathartic for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I could feel bad all week. I'll write a song, I'll feel better. I'll jot down a thing, I'll feel better about myself.
Do you share it with anybody right away, or do you just keep it to yourself for a while?
I keep the idea until I develop it enough. Yeah. I know people who who record a song and then, like, on the phone, and then here's the song, and it's like, cool.
A lot of trouble
on
this.
Got some text during that recording. Yeah.
Yes.
And it's like, oh.
It's really troubly.
Yeah, it's like maybe.
Yeah, it was just them and a bass.
Yeah.
It's still troubly.
You know, there are programs for free online that will get it done for you like that, you know? All you have to do is do it one more time, you know? Like.
I do know people that like to output immediately and like it's getting it out of the way. But to me, and it's just my opinion, I don't think it should be done that way. You can work with some, and you know you've written some stuff that you go, I can't work with this. I got to just toss this.
It's time to throw it away.
Literally, 10 feet from here are 20-some notebooks that Riley has written lyrics for, and they're sitting over there. And he wants me always to throw them away. And when I've pulled them out of the trash for years. Just have them sitting over there. But he started writing lyrics. I started finding them in about 7th grade. And I think if it was called poetry, it would have been nothing. But to him, he was writing lyrics.
I love that Riley was doing that from, like, you know, like that long ago. Like, like that's really cool. Like, I'm surprised he doesn't do more of his lyrics, you know?
Well, they're somewhere. They're just out of my control right now. He lives on his own. So,
good for Riley.
It's really interesting because it's a very much a... introspective, and it's a hunk of his life at a certain time, you know.
Yeah, thinking about it, like those are his experiences in a song form.
Mm-hmm. He's got this great song. He always calls it the first song he ever wrote, and I'll treat it respectfully. Mm-hmm. And the different bands that he's been in, he doesn't want to give away what he considers his A material.
Right.
So he always pulls this first song out, and he's been in a couple bands that have There Comes That Song from 8th Grade, and somebody else is singing it, and they're going, this is really good. People really like it, you know?
I think he's sitting on a lot of good music that he should get out. That's all I'm saying.
Agreed, yeah.
It's too talented not to have more stuff out, I feel. I don't know. That's my personal opinion on the guy. I think he's one of the most talented guys I've ever worked with.
Well, good. That's good. That's good. Because that's the encourager. Everybody needs a supporter of what they do. You have one. I have one, or maybe multiple. Maybe we both have lots of supporters and things like that. But if people say, and it's different when it's your parents.
Yes.
You know, your parents saying, oh, you should really do this. It doesn't carry as much weight as when your contemporaries, your peers, or your like-minded people are behind you.
Yeah. I will say the parents might have more of a say if their feelings are a little more negative, you know, because, you know, the human brain, it hears negative thoughts and stuff before it will hear positive stuff.
Yeah. Conversely, if you get nothing but positive, that can be equally as bad, because you have a person that's, oh, that's great. That's just great. Everything you do is just great.
Yeah. What is not good then? Like, I'm not that great, you know?
Yeah.
And, absolutely.
It's like the song that we're referring to over and over today. Again, today, when I heard that, I thought, man, this is outstanding. And I like the mix. And this is before I knew you did it.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about, again, in the creative process, have you ever had a situation where you wrote for somebody? And what I mean that is not a song about somebody, but rather you have somebody and you think, well, I'd like to do something as well as that person, or I'm writing because I'd like that person to hear this song. So like a muse.
I gotta say all of the above, man.
You know,
like, there's so many reasons why I started writing music and kept going with it, you know, like all those sources you've just said, like 100% on all of them, you know, like I don't think you should be just drawing from one kind of like inspiration, you know. I think if it works for you, then like great. But like, I have a lot of, you know, people that have entered and exited my life that I want to write about and write for, you know, and like, whether it be inspired or I want to show them up or I want to prove that I can do this. You know, like
a lot of them are self challenges too. That you're challenging yourself to be able to. I want to write something of the equivalent nature to this or better.
Yes.
You play guitar.
I play guitar.
That's your primary instrument.
I'd say so.
When you are playing guitar, are you the type of person that has that emotional connection to the guitar, or is it just a tool to get the music out?
You got to look at it both ways. Again, like it can't be one way or the other ever.
Yeah?
Like only a Sith deals in absolutes, you know? Like you have to put your heart into everything music-wise. Like
yeah.
For me, though, it's all heart. I get told that a lot. Like, I got a lot of heart.
Yeah.
So that's coming from me. Like, that question, you're going to hear more heart. But I'm all about technique. I'm all about the technical side of things.
Makes sense.
Yeah, when you're mixing in this day and age, too, you got to realize, like, a mixer has to think, like, these are tools, you know? Like, these are the tools I have.
Right.
I can't put my heart and soul into technical things, but I can use those technical things to improve and enforce what my heart and soul is going through and performing with these instruments, such as guitar.
In editing, I really like when I can attach emotion to the video I shot. And sometimes, number one, you're lucky if you do it just visually all by itself on its own. Or sometimes it's when you add ambient music or you add a layer of image quality that gives it a feeling. You know, sometimes it can be very retro, or it can be futuristic, or it can be a cold, icy cold, or looks like the desert or something. But in general, there's been things I've edited, and it's fine, and it looks good, and I'm pleased with it. But then when I put a very soft music bed in, it actually affects me, and I feel the feeling within it. If it affects me, and I'm this close to it, it's going to hopefully get out and affect somebody else in a positive way.
That's a great way to put it, man. Like, you have to... you have to kind of get that feeling from yourself first, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool, like the video editing, because, you know, you have like, say, a scene or something, and you kind of have to immerse the viewer and yourself using like those effects.
Yeah.
And I forget that, you know, about like video editing, like a basic, you know, you have the scene and... To build that up to create mood, that's a real challenge.
Yeah, well, even like with this podcast, in between the segments, there'll be four segments, there's going to be this little piece of music.
Okay.
Oh. And it's going to fall in and be like,
yeah, it's pretty good.
What's that
pretty
doing good. There? Just showing transition. You know, it's audio transition. Vaughn, if you could go back in time to probably age 10 or 12, what would you tell yourself?
I would say, I know your life's a little out of your hands right now, but it's going to be all right. Try to pick up a guitar, not around your brother. That's all I'm going to say, you know, like I can guarantee you just pick it up earlier, like get started on this whole dream, this whole goal. Like you'll play guitar and you'll realize you love it, man. Like you'll realize you want to do more with this, and you'll find your purpose, you'll find your calling. I wish, you know, part of me wishes I didn't get started so late, but I'm proud of myself for catching up the way I have, you know. Like, I know people who have played much longer than me and have made far, you know, less attractive music, in my opinion, you know.
Yeah,
I hate
sure.
to say that about, you know, people, but I get competitive with it, you know. I can't help being competitive about it because it's a hyper-competitive kind of thing right now.
Yeah.
You know, like, everyone can make music, but, like, not everyone can make great music. And, like, I truly believe that I am capable of making music better than I have made it now, and I'm going to keep trying to make better music. And I'm going to try to keep getting out there, and I'm going to try to keep getting people to listen to my songs, and I'm going to keep playing my songs.
Exactly.
I'm going to keep writing my songs, keep showing my songs, you know?
Yeah. The passion, the love, I can see it's all there. Vaughn, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me, Paul.
Yeah. Impassioned and talented, Vaughn has found something strong with which to connect. Writing, mixing, performing, networking, music. And as of now, he's discovered a plan for himself. Now for the rest of us, we search. In this crazy time, we owe it to ourselves to look deep and ask questions. Do you have a passion? Then pursue it and apply that effort. Vaughn did. For Life's Learning Curve, I'm Paul Hart. Today's show is produced by Paul Hart, assistance by Mike Hansen, Chuck Fisher, and ST Dog. Mixed by Chad Loebner, technical director Rianda Pandena. Musical assistance by Riley Hart and Matt Braun. Special thanks to Hunter Funk, Tristan Malachowski, and Heidi Cerner. Our website, sixtoadcinema.vistaprintdigital.com. Find Von Braun and his music, including The Room is Filled with People That Love You, at Foresighted Music. I'm Paul Hart, and we'll be back soon with more stories from Life's Learning Curve.